What is up? Welcome to another edition of the NFL Fantasy Football Show presented by Caesars Rewards. It's me, your man, MG Marcus Grant, masking and socially distancing when and where possible. And well, we're out of fantasy camp now. We got through fantasy camp over the last month, so I appreciate all the folks who stopped by to talk to me about the different divisions of the NFL. But now we are full on into, I guess, training camp. I mean, I know guys haven't gotten out in pads and are hitting quite yet, but it's training camp in, you know, kind of an altered form. So we had a whole new stage of what we're doing with the podcast. But I wanted to do something really fun and really special today. I had sort of been cooking this idea up for a while. And so today was the opportunity, I think, to unleash this to the world. So I hope you will enjoy what we're about to do on this podcast for the next hour or so, because I'll tell you that I am more excited for this than I have been for any podcast in a really long time. Before I get too far into that, I do want to say hello to my faithful producer, Senior Edward L. Murphy, Esquire. Murph, what's going on?
Well, the happiest I've been this 2020 is from a little ping pong ball that went through a tube last night. So I'm not sure if that's sad about my life or just my love of my teams. But yeah, it is pretty great. The Rangers got the number one pick. So my biggest sports moment is now a draft lottery.
Yeah. You know, well, especially because I know you as a Knicks fan, you were disappointed because you guys didn't win the lottery for Zion when it seemed like all but certain that he was going to be a Knick. So, you know, you guess you get something, right?
To stay along with the Avengers theme, I think it's a soul for a soul. It's like the Knicks lose lottery and pick awful players so the Rangers could rise. That's really what it comes down to.
Yeah, well, you know, at least the Yankees are playing well, so you got that going for you.
Yeah, that's true.
There you go. All right, let's get into this because, like I said, I'm really fired up about what's going to happen right now. So I have a slew of guests that are joining me on today's show. You might have even heard of some of them. So we'll kind of go around the horn. We'll start with the guy who actually was on this pod just a couple of weeks ago. He was helping me talk about the NFC North during the Fantasy Camp segment. He is all over the place. He just started his own new micro pod. Please welcome back to the show, the one and only James Coe. James Coe, welcome back, man. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. It's good to be back. I appreciate you bringing everybody back together, man. This is a really, really cool kind of moment, man. I'm pumped up.
Yeah, absolutely. So next, he was kind of the heart and soul and the brains of this whole operation for a long time. And then he decided to get smart and go learn some more, but always excited to get him back on the show as well. It is our pal, Alex Gelhar. Alex, what's up?
Not too much. Just thrilled to be here with all you guys again. I'm sure I'll get roasted at some point for some innocuous comment later in the show. But, you know, just like the good old days. So I'm happy to be here.
I'm sure at this point you guys can kind of tell where this is going. But next up, our guy who I don't even know what to say about him other than he really is like he's maybe the engine, the fire behind what this show was for so many years. Now he is plying his trade over on the video game side of things. It is our boy, the franchise, Matt Franciscovich. Franchise, what's going on?
What up, fellas? Happy to be here. This is super exciting. I can't remember when all of us have been on a podcast together. It's got to be 2 years, going on 2 years now. But things are good at EA Sports, so I'm ready to rock.
Yeah. And then, of course, we can't do this show without rounding out the whole crew. I don't know, maybe the nerdiest among us? I don't know. I don't know how to even describe it. But it's my pal. It's our pal. It is the one and only Matt Harmon. Harmon, how are things?
Literally, no chance. I'm the nerdiest of this crew. when we've got goofballs over here with comics and all that, you've got all these dork little toys in the background, Marcus. Give me a break. Anyways, I'm happy to be back with the stronghold, man. This is awesome. Other than that comment, this is awesome.
Oh, sweet. So, I mean, a lot has changed. Here's the thing. We all keep in contact with one another. We all kind of still talk. So I know kind of what you guys have been up to. I know that the long and short of it is in the last couple of years since we last did a pod together, I had a kid. Co had a second kid. Harmon got engaged. Gelhar's on the verge of a law degree. And Franchise, you're still angry. So other than that,
true.
Really changed. But I guess people who don't follow us maybe as closely as we follow each other. Let's go around the horn. James, start with you. Like, what are you up to? What have you been up to since the pod?
I think you pretty much hit it on the head. You know, I'm kind of just buried over here with two kids now and trying to figure out how to manage my time, which obviously has been not my strong suit. But I'm over at DirecTV. I'm going to be starting my third season over there this upcoming season, which is great. Part of Fantasy Zone. Should be starting my second season over at Amazon for NFL Next, which is a kind of a next gen stats based program with Kay Adams, Chris Long. Really looking forward to that. And yeah, as you mentioned, I started a little micropod series. I kind of sort of thought it would be good for some folks to kind of get like a little 5 to 7 minute podcast in their lives if they just wanted a little quick hitter fantasy pod. So I thought I kind of try to fill that gap and we'll see where it goes, man. I believe in the product and I think it's pretty good. And I hope kind of people give it a try.
Sweet. Gilhar, I know what you've been doing. Tell the folks what you've been up to lately.
Well, I've been reading a lot of very dense books as I try to wrap up this law degree here soon, aiming to get out a semester early, so December graduation, you know, right in the midst of a global pandemic. Excellent time to graduate with another degree, but also to keep things going on the other side, you know, could always have to scratch that fantasy itch. So I wrote for the NFL again for a little while, and then I've been working with 4for4 for the last 2 years. So I'm writing articles for them, and I will be hosting their the most accurate podcast for a couple days a week this season, as long as that goes. So that should be fun as well.
Oh, cool. Awesome. Franchito, what's going on in your world?
Yeah, man, I'm over at EA Sports working on Madden NFL. So been doing that for a couple years. We are actually Madden NFL 21 comes out in a couple weeks. So we are in full go mode right now. I'm busier than ever.
Got any codes, bro?
Yeah, we might have. What's the deal with the codes, man?
There might be some codes in about a week or two, but only if you, are nice to me. But yeah, man, we got some exciting new features coming out this year at Madden, and we got Gen 5 consoles coming out in the holidays. So we got some cool new sort of next level technology stuff hitting the EA Sports Madden and FIFA. And it's really cool to be a part of all that. And I, like Gilhar said, I'm scratching the fantasy itch on the side. I was a contributor to the Fantasy Black Book again. So go to Amazon and grab that. That is available now for the 2020 season.
Sweet. I'm just going to pepper you with questions about Madden ratings during the show. So,
get ready. All right.
And then Harmon, you are, you were a budding superstar here. You have racketed to the stratosphere. What's life like for you now that you are a major celebrity in the fantasy world?
I don't know about that, but, things are good, man. Just kicking off the third season here with Yahoo Fantasy. Love it, man. I mean, it's a lot of fun. We've got a lot of cool stuff plan for this upcoming season, despite the fact that, I'll be shooting from this room right here. I showed you guys a little bit earlier the setup for this fall. But other than that, still doing reception perception, 6 years worth of data. Now I think it's the best it's ever been. I'm more bullish on it as a tool for wide receiver evaluation than ever. I'm sure I'll bring it up here at some point. But life's good, man. Two dogs, fiance, this house. I mean, things have gotten much better for me since I left you guys. So really appreciate the send off.
We're excited to drag you down at least for the next hour or so. So we appreciate that. By the way, I do love whenever I have a positive take on a wide receiver and then you like back it up with good reception perception data, like I do a little happy dance in my apartment because it makes me feel better.
That's what I'm here for, man. Yeah. We're gonna make you feel better.
I totally appreciate that. All right, let's talk some football, some fantasy football in particular. The big story over the last few days has been Darius Geis turning himself into the police following charges of domestic violence. Not almost immediately after that, he was released by the Washington Football Club. This is where you always sort of, there's that uneasy feeling about talking about, next man up sort of thing when you are dealing with something as serious, as disgusting as domestic violence charges and that sort of thing. But this is also where I throw in the disclaimer that we are a fantasy football podcast. And so this is what we are going to do. So that brings us to the question. And Gilhar, I'll start with you. I mean, now that Darius Geis is out of the picture in Washington, is there a running back there that you are targeting that you have kind of an eye on in that backfield?
I mean, I'm sure we'll hit all the options there with the ageless wonder, Adrian Peterson, and RB wide receiver hybrid, Antonio Gibson. But one guy that I circled and I actually just took in a 4-for-4 best ball league we're doing in one of the later rounds is Bryce Love, kind of a forgotten former standout at Stanford. You know, his junior year, he was looking on track to be a very high pick in the draft. He had over 2,000 yards, 19 touchdowns, but then tore his ACL, and Washington took him in the fourth round last year. But he passed his physical. Looks like he's going to be ready to go. So he's going to certainly be an interesting name to watch in the backfield, because while Gibson's a unique player with his kind of dual threat upside, Love is more of a traditional running back. And with Ron Rivera there, and also Bryce Love can catch passes, so he might be a guy that could slide in and find a significant workload there. And he's coming at a much steeper discount right now than I think Antonio Gibson, who the, you know, fantasy hype machine has rocketed up draft boards in a few days span.
I mean, that Gibson hype is wild. I mean, Harmon, Co, are either of you buying into this hype for Antonio Gibson right now?
Oh, he's got to be a Co guy. Give me a break. Tell me he's not a James Co guy.
What was his 40 time? That's what we need to know.
I'll tell you right now, it was a 4.39.
Baby.
4.39 at 230 pounds. Come on. Of course, this is a James Co guy. Absolutely, 100%. And I don't think you have to overpay for him, right? So he's going around pick 100 right now, which I think is actually a pretty fair price. And I get it. You know, we don't know what kind of role he's going to have with Washington, but I'm not really buying into Adrian Peterson. He's 35 years old. I know he had a pretty good last 11 games, actually. He was actually pretty solid. He had seven out of his final 11 regular season games, he scored in double-digit PPR points. So that's actually decent, but I'm just not buying it. I do like Bryce Love because, you know, the guy's going around 15 or undrafted, so you're getting him for free. But Antonio Gibson, sign me up, man. The guy, again, 230 pounds, right, a 4.39 40, an explosive player. Look, I did the homework, right? I watched every single one of his carries from his senior season.
Wasn't all that many to watch, to be honest.
Yeah, 33 of them. Took me all 15 minutes. But it should be noted, right? He had 12 total touchdowns on 75 carries or something like that his senior season. So obviously the explosiveness is there.
I mean, Harmon, I was taking shots at Antonio Gibson late in drafts, sort of under the premise that if he got on the field at all in that backfield, that it would be more as a wide receiver, that they would line him up out wide. And now I know you, like a lot of people, but you particularly, you love Terry McLaurin this year. I mean, is there still room for Gibson as a wide receiver, or does he just completely absorb a running back role now in Washington?
I think if he absorbs a running back role, that's good news for him. This is probably even when Geis was there, and even so now after that, he's gone. It's one of the most confusing backfields in the entire NFL because they're stocked with a bunch of weird guys who don't really fit together. I thought that Gibson previously stood out because I think he's got the best shot to be, if anybody's going to be a prime pass catcher in this offense, I think it's going to be Gibson out of the backfield, because I think this team's going to throw the ball a lot. I've got them projected for the 10th most pass attempts in the NFL, because last year under Scott Turner when Ron Rivera and all those guys, when the team was really bad in Carolina, they, even though they had a bad quarterback and some questions in the pass catching core and like the best running back in the NFL, they still threw the ball at a really high rate because they were a bad team. They were trailing. I expect that to be similar in Washington, and really after McLaurin, who I think you can project for 23% of the team targets, there's not a lot of guys there that are going to catch passes. So I think Gibson's in a prime spot right now. I've got him at like running back 32, and really the only guy that I'm going to be aggressively targeting in this offense in the backfield, right? I should say.
So franchise, I mean, you are, like I said, you are our Madden guru right now, right? And I mean, with this shakeup, I know, you know, ratings, you guys always hear about ratings and that sort of thing. I mean, how fluid is it? How much potentially do we see some ratings changes in Madden because of this?
Oh, I think if we see, like, at the beginning of the season, the ratings are affected by what happens in real life. So, like, beginning of the season, Antonio Gibson comes out and has a hot first week or two. His rating, right now, he's in a 69 overall, which is very nice. And he's got 91 speed, 91 acceleration, and he's got better catching than Adrian Peterson. And we haven't mentioned Peyton Barber yet, who's also, I think, on this depth chart, who had some success in Tampa Bay. But you know, it all depends on what how they come out of the gate. If he comes out and has a hot start, his rating could go up. And man, he could be one of those guys you're trying to plug into, you know, the backfield on a third and long and have him do a wheel route and just blow past all the defenses. So I like this Antonio Gibson guy. Like, I think this is sort of the future of how NFL teams are trending with their backfields, like one sort of big play pass catching back and one sort of power back for the early down. So I think Gibson can have a big role out of the gate.
Gilhard, does you mentioned Adrian Peterson. Does he persist? We've been told he's a cyborg, and like every time we ride him off, he still comes back for like 850 yards. Will he persist again this year?
I'm sure he's going to hang around and get some carries. To what extent he fends off the two youngsters? I mean, this is also an offseason unlike any other. And typically running back's an easier transition period from college to the NFL. But like, these guys are coming out of a weird pandemic. They're having less time with the teams. They're having Zoom meetings. So, I mean, Bryce Love has been there for a season, so maybe that gives him a slight edge. But I think Peterson might be an early favorite for some of those early down carries, which could distract from those guys in the early weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I know that I have been leaning toward, you know, kind of trending toward veterans in a lot of places because of what you mentioned, because of the COVID and not having a real off season. I do wonder, and I don't have an answer for this, like how much it's impacted by, like in Washington, you've got a new coaching staff, you've got a new head coach, you've got a lot of turnover. So in some ways it's sort of new for everybody. You know, like I said, I don't have a real answer for that. I just know it's kind of another wrinkle that we're adding here. James, for Darius guys, I mean,
Add something for Adrian Peterson and sure. The reason I'm not buying at all, despite the fact that, you know, he did show some flashes last year. So much of his production, as has been noted, relies on, you know, under center play. How much of that are we going to see with Ron Rivera's new system? So I think we can kind of sort of throw out what we saw last year in terms of the offense, and they're installing a brand new offense here. And I would have concerns that if Ron Rivera goes to a very shotgun heavy approach, where does Adrian Peterson fit in? I know that they want some stability in the backfield. And of course, 35-year-old Adrian Peterson, one of the best to ever do it, will provide you, I guess, on paper, some stability. I just don't think he's going to be a schematic fit. And that's another reason why I think both Bryce Love and Antonio Gibson are interesting plays. I would probably fade AP, but I think some of that comes with the structure of the offense.
Sort of a random question that just popped in my head while you were talking, James. I mean, obviously you mentioned Adrian Peterson being one of the best to ever do it, and there's no doubt about that. Are we going to look at him differently when he finally retires just because of these years he's sort of just kind of hung on? I mean, like the short-lived period, you know, that year he was between Arizona and New Orleans. Now these last couple of years in Washington, like they've just been meh at best. And I just wonder if it's going to impact sort of the way we think about him long-term. I don't know if anybody has any thoughts on that. But
I mean, he's sort of doing like a low-grade version of what Frank Gore's doing, right? I mean, because he's not quite like that much of a cockroach where he just continues to live on no matter what disaster strikes.
But I think,
but I think like people, but to Marcus's point, I think people forget that Frank Gore, back when he first broke out with the 49ers, was this extremely exciting guy who could catch passes, who could do everything, who was, you know, like a freak athlete, because he comes back at like 85% of what he was at Miami after all these injuries, but he still ends up being what, like a top five running back in the league during his peak with the Niners. But now we just think of him as this guy who has putzed along through like the AFC East teams, you know, just hanging on and hanging on. But that's not really a representation of who he was at his prime. And neither is, you know, Adrian Peterson, to Coe's point, getting stuffed with like 20 carries for no reason on a terrible team last year while Bill Callahan's trying to run out the clock on the season, literally like 25 minutes per game or whatever. It was insane. But that's not who Adrian Peterson was in his prime. So I think it's a good point overall.
Yeah,
I think the prime for Adrian Peterson was also so good and so dynamic, especially right out of the gate. Like, you know, didn't he break the single game rushing record as a rookie? Like, I'm just remembering highlights of Adrian Peterson in that purple uniform, stiff-arming guys into the stands from the field, and, you know, carving through defenses and running away from guys, you know, from DBs. Like, Frank Gore, I love Frank Gore, and he's great. And like you said, Harmon, he had a good, really good career with the 49ers, but he never had those highlights. And I think those highs are what are really going to stand out for Peterson as opposed to these, you know, waning retirement years in Washington.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's probably fair. I mean, James, so for Darius Geis, obviously he's got a whole host of legal issues that he's got to work through. And obviously some personal issues, it would seem, as well. Does this mean, is this the last we've seen of Darius Geis on a football field? I mean, we've seen guys obviously get back into this league after domestic violence issues. But the DV stuff plus the injuries, is this kind of the end of Darius Geis for the NFL?
I would imagine so. You know, running back is obviously a very deep position. And with what we've seen from Darius Geis, it's not much. And he's suffered multiple knee injuries now, has not shown an ability to stay on the field. I mean, if we're still living off of his college tape, I get it. Exciting, exciting college player. But when he's hit the NFL, we really haven't seen much. So I would be surprised, especially given the severity of the charges levied against him. I would be very surprised if we ever saw him in the NFL again.
Yeah. You know, it's definitely unfortunate, but like I said, he's got some bigger issues to worry about to straighten out before we worry about football. But it does seem as though his football career may have passed him by before we ever got to really see what he could be at the NFL level. All right. So I know a lot of folks are starting to get their drafts up and going. I know there's no specific time to do a draft, but do you guys have any ideas of when now is a good time to do the draft because we have COVID concerns and we don't have training camp? Is it better to wait later? Is it better to go earlier? I mean, how are you guys feeling about that?
I'm always a fan of going as late as possible for injuries, roster shakeups, what have you. So the later you can hold out, the better, and we'll know hopefully more about COVID and its impact on the season and teams.
All right. So let's kind of talk some draft stuff here, right? I feel like we've got kind of the top two picks sort of settled, right? McCaffrey's generally going number one. Saquon Barkley is going generally number two. Franchise, if there's a guy that you are targeting at number three, if you're in that number three slot, is there a particular guy you've got your eye on there?
Yeah, I'm going Michael Thomas. No question. I don't care about drafting a running back first. I want Michael Thomas. He was especially in PPR, he was an absolute fantasy point machine last year. He's got another season of Drew Brees under center. Like, why would you not want Michael Thomas to anchor your fantasy team? You're looking at guys like Zeke or who else is around that area? Let's see here.
Kamara's around there.
Yeah. Like I don't want to take a chance on Kamara. He was kind of a dud last year. Derrick Henry is just hype off like the late season surge.
Wait, Dalvin, I thought you and Harmon had like a lot of
I don't want to take him third. I'm not taking him third overall. I love Derrick Henry. I love Derrick Henry. He's a beast, but a lot of these guys in that area have question marks, and I don't think Michael Thomas has a single question mark about him.
Harmon, I remember there was like a 2-week period on Twitter where Twitter tried to tell me that Michael Thomas wasn't a good wide receiver. But did I hallucinate that or what?
I mean, it's just a really weird and kind of disingenuous discussion. So, but like every year it happens because he supposedly runs a lot of slant routes. I mean, he does run a decent amount of slant routes, but the reality is like a lot of big time wide receivers, DeAndre Hopkins, AJ Green, you know, other players like DJ Moore, like kind of these up and coming guys, teams want to target good players on those routes because they're very efficient. But regardless, I think that's kind of just a disingenuous discussion. My answer to this question is Alvin Kamara. I know Franchise talked about it a little bit. I had him at running back one last year. Obviously, that did not work out. According to the player himself, he tweeted earlier this offseason that he was, you know, 75% last year. And he still had, I mean, I think a pretty decent season. But really, if he's 100% this year, I think the outlook that forced me to have him at running back one last year still exists this year. You know, I think he was averaging 20 touches per game in his first five healthy games. And there's so much bankable touchdown, you know, positive regression coming his way because he was really having trouble finding the end zone last year, but we know he is a proven touchdown scorer, still one of the figurehead pieces of that Saints offense. I think he can easily catch 90 passes and score double digit touchdowns. So he's my running back three this year.
Anybody have a non-Saint that they want to stump for at the number three spot?
I was going to join Harmon on the Kamara train because last year he battled through so many injuries too. I think he had ankle injuries. He revealed he had like a tear in his knee or something too that really slowed him down. So he still had – it's weirdly, he's had 81 receptions every single year of his career.
Right.
I'm not super threatened by Emmanuel Sanders coming over. I think he's going to pick up some of that extra work from the other, you know, hodgepodge of wide receivers they have. But Kamara's going to have a solid workload. I mean, they'll mix Latavius Murray in. But I think, as Harmon said, the receiving work and the touchdown upside make him an easy choice for me at number three, just ahead over Zeke.
All right, Cole. Well, who you got?
Yeah, I love Alvin Kamara, and I don't think you can go wrong at three with, I'll tell you what, with any of those trio, whether we're talking about Michael Thomas, Alvin Kamara, but I would lean just a bit towards Ezekiel Elliott. Dallas had the second best offense based off of DVOA last year. Saints weren't far behind. I think they were four. But I think we're kind of, for me, I'm kind of sort of banking on the fact that Zeke is attached to this high-powered offense with a really good quarterback. Not saying Drew Brees is not a great quarterback. He is, absolutely. But he's also 41 years old. There is, I think, a little bit of elevated concern there. And to me, I just feel overall that I think Dallas's offense is a little bit more secure. I think their schedule is a little bit more favorable. And Zeke has just been so rock solid. I mean, yeah. Alvin Kamara did have a little bit of a downturn last year. And I do, as Harmon mentioned, expect to see an uptick in scoring. But overall, Zeke has just been an absolute rock at that position. And for me, at three, I don't want to lose my draft there. I would just lean just a bit towards Ezekiel Elliott at three.
Do you feel like we've kind of gotten bored of Zeke? I think that like as a fantasy hive mind or whatever, we just got accustomed to the fact like, okay, this is what he is. He finally got more of that receiving work the last couple of years that people were really clamoring for. But like Ko said, he's a pretty good bet to lead the league in rushing touchdowns because this is going to be one of the best offenses in the league. They've added juice to the passing game. So, I mean, yeah, I think this, like when I'm looking at Zeke, I just feel like I'm personally like, yeah, I know exactly what I'm going to get. And I'm just, you know, I'm more of a tempted by the unknown and the high ceiling. So I think that's why I'm going Kamara. But I do think, I mean, there's no question that Zeke is great. And he's just, like I said, I think we've just become accustomed to what he is.
Well, yeah, and I think sort of some of that logic has got me, like, that's why I've been leaning Michael Thomas, right? Maybe it's because, you know, we sort of know what Zeke is. And that's not to say that it's bad, right? But I feel like, you know, Michael Thomas has become that sort of like think outside the box sort of pick at number three, right? We've gotten so accustomed to just being locked into running backs in those top three or four spots. And now this PPR world that we all live in, regardless of, you know, how I feel about PPR, this is what we do. Let's take advantage of the situation, right? And so why not go after a guy who seems almost a lock to catch well over 100 passes just because of how that Saints offense runs and the fact that he's going to be the most targeted guy. I don't think between Kamara, Thomas, Zeke, I don't think there's a wrong answer. I feel like it's become maybe the most thought about position in the draft right now, because like I said, the first two spots are locked up. Everything else after that, maybe some questions, but three seems to be where a lot of the real conversation's happening right now.
My only slight concern with Zeke is the passing game work, since they loaded up that offense more. They got rid of the husk of Jason Witten. They drafted CeeDee Lamb. And now Mike McCarthy's coming in as the head coach. And in his years in Green Bay, he wasn't like super heavily reliant on targeting his backs. Like Eddie Lacy got a decent amount of work and some of those other guys in there. Now, granted, Zeke is a far better player than any of them, but I just wonder with so many mouths to feed, if his passing game work is going to dip down into more of like a 40 to 50 target range as opposed to the like 70 to 90 it was the last couple of years.
So we've all put in our votes for who should be the number three overall pick. Only 60% of eligible Americans voted in 2016. On the field or at the polls, 60% isn't good enough. NFL Votes is a league-wide initiative to support and encourage voter education, registration, and activation of players, clubs, and fans from now up until Election Day. Inspired by ongoing conversations with players, NFL Votes will leverage the NFL platform to empower and improve our communities through exercising the right to vote. Join the NFL family by registering to vote today and make your voice heard this November. Visit NFL.com/votes to learn more. guys like that? That was smooth. I just kind of slid that in.
That was hell so yeah. smooth. That was like the best segue I've ever heard.
Dude, I appreciate that.
That threw me. I was like, wait, where are we going? Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. Let's go.
So franchise, has there been clamoring to make Clyde Edwards-Helaire a 99 overall now? Like, that's just like, I feel like Twitter is going to be pounding on your door for that any day now.
Not yet. But I'm telling you, if he comes out of the gate hot, this is what happens. They come out of the gate hot week one. Everyone sees a big week and they're like, let's put him in a 99 right now. And it's like, you got to earn that 99. You don't just get that after 1 week. He's a 69, which is nice. But it's going to be a while till he's a 99.
Wait, he's the same as didn't you say Gibson was 69 right? earlier?
Oh, my bad. No, I don't know what I messed up, guys. I messed up.
I was going to say, fix your game, bro. Fix your game.
I messed up.
Or it was just going to be a bit where every player franchise talked about, yeah, he's a 69 overall.
He's a 69.
Patrick Mahomes, 69 overall.
Clyde Edwards-Helaire is a 74 overall.
Okay.
Madden 21 at launch.
All right, that's fair. All right, so Harmon, I mean, how high is too high to draft CEH at this point?
So here's the deal. The only guys, like, in terms of running backs that I'm absolutely not considering taking Clyde Edwards-Helaire before these guys is Christian McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley, Alvin Kamara, Zeke, and Derrick Henry. I think after that, it's fair game. I think you can take him ahead of Dalvin Cook. I think you could take him ahead of Aaron Jones. Now, if you want to go like what franchise said, going wide receiver, I think Michael Thomas certainly is a safer pick than any of these running backs that I just talked about. I think Davante Adams is my wide receiver one this year. I think you can take him over Clyde Edwards-Helaire. But if you're considering a running back after that top six, I think the rookie out of Kansas City is as good of a bet as anybody, because sure, he might not, you know, have 70% of the backfield touches. There might be some DeAndre Washington sprinkled in, you know, the ghost of Darwin Thompson. He might get out there too, if he's even a real person, hard to say, probably just my personal preseason favorite pick from last year, whatever. Like there's plenty of guys in the passing game too, but Edwards-Helaire is a great receiver coming out of college. And just the reality of it is 55% or 60% of the backfield touches in Kansas City is worth a lot more then 70 to 75% of some of these other offenses. And I'd put Green Bay in there. I'd put Minnesota in there and all these other players. So I think those are the only running backs I'm absolutely not taking them over. So you're looking at him around pick 7, 8, 9.
All right, Co, you're the one who usually just runs and jumps off a cliff for guys like this. So you're taking CEH at like 3, right? 3 or 4.
Yeah, I was surprised I didn't hear him there earlier.
No, I would take him at 5. I mean, it's funny, you know, Harmon talks about, you know, taking him before guys like Dalvin Cook, maybe Michael Thomas and things like that. I mean, if you're going to do that, you've got to take him at 5. Yep. You're talking about CMC, Saquon, Zeke, Kamara, and then maybe Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I mean, that's how high I might take him. Look, I think Dalvin is in a perfect system for him. They don't ask him to do too much except run to the outside. And that offense is going to be pretty much exactly the same. Gary Kubiak's going to be running the offense there in Minnesota. We know what he's done with fantasy running backs throughout his career. So I think Dalvin is certainly in consideration for 5. Michael Thomas, we've talked about at length, but Clyde Edwards-Helaire, you're talking about the lead back on the best offense in the league. I think 5 is actually an okay price for him. And just because he's a rookie and quote unquote, we don't know what he's going to do, it's like, who cares? We're talking about the lead back in the best offense. You put that in a vacuum, you're taking that guy at 5. I mean, I think that's an okay price for him. Now, if he falls to 7 or 8, even better. But I think to me, overall, I think you could take him at 5.
I mean, I've forgotten myself, right? Because I was, you guys remember, I mean, I was waving the flag for Kareem Hunt left and right, you know, and it took injuries for him to get on the field and become the star that he did in his rookie season. And so I don't know why I've become so nervous about CEH as though there's going to be some major committee, because that's just not the Andy Reid way. I mean, when he has a guy that he likes, he goes with that guy. And so I sort of have been hesitant. I appreciate you guys.
Even when Kareem Hunt was balling and doing big things, like, we would randomly see, you know, random guys.
Darrell Williams with 2 touchdowns.
Exactly. You know what I mean?
Charkandrick West.
Charkandrick West. Kendrick West would come in. Remember when there was like clear dump off situations, like, oh my God, I need these Kareem Hunt dump off PPR points. I need these so bad. And it was Kendrick West.
But that's
in there in the 2 minute drill. That's awful. And that's, I think to me, that's what Andy Reid has done. That's the Andy Reid way over the last few years. And I would anticipate some frustration there. If you're going to own CEH, you're definitely going to see rando guys pop in. But I think overall still, you're taking the upside, and CEH certainly presents that.
The only reason I feel like we ever saw like Charkandrick West and Spencer Ware and some of these guys when Kareem Hunt was at his peak was that they really didn't trust Kareem Hunt as a pass protector and as a passing game asset, which he's really grown into. That's like all he did in Cleveland last year. Right. But that was the big, like, they liked the way Charkandrick West was a blocker, you know, same with Spencer Ware, all that type of usual young running back stuff. But that's not really a concern with this particular player because he was so prolific as a pass catcher in LSU. So that's the only reason that I think this is a different situation, and we will probably see, like I said, I think you're going to see DeAndre Washington. You're going to see some of these other goofballs in the backfield there. But for the most part, I think he's going to get the primary touches and we'll be flying there.
By the way, Harmon, I need Darwin Thompson to be a real person because I took him very late in a best ball draft. So it would be nice if he actually has a corporeal form that gets on the field and actually touches the football.
He was very real to all of us in August last year.
Oh, yeah. Super so real.
Jeez. Man.
It was like, you can't leave a draft in 2019 without Darwin Thompson and Justice Hill. I felt like that was these two guys might not even, like, Justice Hill might not make the Ravens this year. You know, like, Darwin Thompson, again, is he a real person? So I can't wait to see, like, Antonio Gibson just, you know, not even be in the NFL next year.
Gilhar, so if you are of the mind to reach for a quarterback early, I know there's generally one of two choices. Which of the two choices would you reach for if you were akin to doing that?
Well, can I suggest a third?
Sure, absolutely.
Because the one I want to reach for this year is Deshaun Watson. I think we've had a tough time of quarterbacks repeating. There's a lot of hard things to hit, you know, touchdown regression and offenses and things, you know, game script just changing. But you look at Watson, and the last couple of years, he's been a top five quarterback. He's one of the only quarterbacks to hit 300 plus points each of the last 2 years. Since he came into the league, he's the only quarterback to average 20 plus points a game in that span. And he's done all of this with like relatively mediocre average statistical numbers. He's just such a good, efficient quarterback, but he's never had more than 26 passing touchdowns. He's never finished in the top 10 in passing yards. So what if, given the deficiencies in Houston's defense, the weapons they got, if Will Fuller stays healthy, what if Deshaun Watson balls out and throws 35 touchdowns and 4,700 yards this year? Then you add in his rushing. I think he's easily the QB1 in that situation. So he's the guy I can get at a little bit more of a discount instead of Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes. I think he's got the talent around him. He's been in the offense long enough, and he is talented enough as a quarterback to be the guy that this year vaults to the QB1 status.
So are you basically saying that Will Fuller plus Brandon Cooks is greater than DeAndre Hopkins?
And Randall Cobb.
And Randall Cobb.
There's a lot of evidence statistically that he's actually John Watson.
Franchise is basically Randall Cobb.
No, he lost DeAndre Hopkins.
They added him, so it's just another body. But anyways, it's not like Hopkins was the only reason Watson was ever successful. There were stats that he actually had like a higher QBR when he was throwing to players, not DeAndre Hopkins. So I'm saying there's a chance where more of it's on his shoulders this year, and the star player we've seen shown up a lot of times in the playoffs and in big games in the season is there the entire year and just lights this stuff on fire.
Do any of you guys have a good feel for this? Because I agree with what Gelhar's saying. Like, I think Watson's going to be a really good player this year. I mean, he's always a really good player, but I think like losing Hopkins could like force him to be a better real life quarterback, even if he doesn't, because he's not just going to rely on this one guy. But do any of you guys have a feel for how this Texans offense outside of Watson is going to shake out? Because, like, theoretically, on paper, they have a very talented receiver core, but every one of them has a ton of questions. They have a two pass-catching running backs. Like, I find myself taking the injury discount on Will Fuller because, you know, I'm a sucker. But do any of you guys, like, other than that, have any feel for how this is going to go? Because I was doing projections yesterday. I'm like, just what the hell, like throwing my hands up in the air looking at this receiver core.
The wide receiver core is like, it's like the movie Multiplicity, right? It's just like, it's like the same guy a whole bunch of times, right? I mean, yeah, Will Fuller is Brandon Cooks, is Randall Cobb. I mean, so like
Kenny Stills, too.
Kenny Stills, don't forget Kenny Stills.
Stills, right? I mean, it's like the same guy four different times in this offense. So, I mean, ideally you get a, maybe, I don't know. I was asking somebody recently, like between Will Fuller and Brandon Cooks, do you get a combined 25 games out of the two of them, right? Like, I feel like that's the question you sort of have to ask yourself when you're making the decision to draft any one of those guys.
Yeah, I'm with you, Harmon. I've taken shots at all of these guys because their ADPs are all like ridiculously low considering the quarterback they're attached to. But I think that's baking in the uncertainty of like Will Fuller's hamstrings, Brandon Cook's concussions, which version of Randall Cobb is going to show up, and which version of Kenny Stills is going to show up. But I have no feel other than I think Will Fuller's probably got to be the presumptive number one. Since he's been there and he's got the tools and we've seen what he can do with Watson. So I love him at his injury discount as well. But otherwise, I'm just kind of taking stabs at these guys and hoping it works out. Because like Cooks and Fuller are going in like the 9th to 11th-ish round. And then Randall Cobb and Kenny Stills are always hanging around at the back end of drafts. And I'm more than happy to just chuck one in as my wide receiver 5 and hope for the best.
Yeah, I think you go for Kenny Stills thinking that Will Fuller and Brandon Cooks are going to be out at some point for any given amount of time. And Kenny Stills is pretty reliable, and he's been in Houston for what, a year or two now. So he knows what's going on there. He has a rapport with Watson. I think he's a good late round dart throw there.
I mean, I was going to ask you, franchise, like which of those guys is like the highest rated? Cause that was how I was going to make my decision. Don't tell me that they're all, you know, rated 69, please. Like, I just want to know.
Off the top of my head, Brandon Cooks is probably the highest rated, but let me throw some filters in the spreadsheet and
Well, while franchise is kind of messing around with those filters, I'll just say this. I'm not optimistic about the Texans' offense. For me, I think Bill O'Brien has regressed each and every year. His offenses are predictable. They're bad. And basically, the bottom line is they have relied on Deshaun Watson and Nuke Hopkins to just make plays. You lose a guy who's a potential future Hall of Famer in Nuke Hopkins. And I like Brandon Cooks as a player, but I mean, come on, he's had 4 concussions over the last 2 seasons. Will Fuller has missed 20 games over his last 3 years. Kiki Coutee has missed 16 games over his last 2 years. David Johnson looked like an absolute ghost of a ghost last year. We don't know what we're going to get from him. There's too much uncertainty on this offense. And you mentioned Kenny Stills. I guess I'm just surprised, you know, because Kenny Stills got 5 starts last year, and in those 5 starts, okay, so he got playing time. He averaged 33 yards receiving in those 5 starts. I think he's an okay player, but he's at this point in his career, he's a Jag. He's just a guy. I'm not really that optimistic about the Texans offense. Again, mostly because I just see Bill O'Brien's future on the wall. And it does not look good. And I think we've seen this in the NFL a lot where head coaches have started to lose their teams and then they just fall off a cliff. And that's kind of where I feel like the Texans are approaching right now. They're putting a lot of Band-Aids on some glaring holes and they're hoping it works out. And for me, I just do not believe in Bill O'Brien and I will fade that team all day long.
What's not to believe, James? I mean, he blew a 24-point lead in the playoffs and then got more power within the organization afterwards. Like, I don't really know how that worked, but I need to get on
that. Gotta respect that.
Put my faith in Deshaun, not B.O.B., so. We've seen a lot of coaches get propped up by great quarterbacks for a long time, like McCarthy. You know, it can happen again in Houston.
Oh, man. All right, we'll go around the horn on this one. Is there a player or players, if you got more than one, after the 3rd round that you are trying to draft at all costs? I'll start with you, Harmon. Anybody that you really make sure you're making sure you have to get?
Yeah, I'm going to give you 2 because I'm a cheater. But also, number 1, because the first one's going to be Terry McLaurin, and we kind of already talked about it. We kind of already talked about it a little bit earlier. But just let me read off – just indulge me here for a second to read off a little – reception perception all-star stats on Terry McLaurin. 76% success rate versus man coverage as a rookie. That was at the 89th percentile over the last 6 years. 79.7% success rate versus press. That's the 93rd percentile. Excellent across the route tree, deep, short, intermediate, whatever. He crushed it. His success rate versus man coverage is the fourth best for any rookie ever charted since 2014. Third best in success rate versus press. The only two players to beat him during that time frame, Odell Beckham and Michael Thomas. We obviously know those guys are great. He has the 34th best score since the entire series has been, you know, in inception since 2014. So I think he is an elite player that is just starting to ascend. And everybody can yap about, you know, Dwayne Haskins as much as they want. But the last three games, Haskins was passable. McLaurin crushed it statistically in those games. And even if you just give him the rate stats that he had with Haskins last year, and like I said, a 23% target share in what I expect to be a pass-heavy offense, and I think that's like 23% target share for Terry McLaurin with the rest of the chuckleheads that they got in that passing game, I think is pretty conservative. You easily get 80-plus catches, 1,100-plus yards, and then you're just talking, is he going to score 6-7 touchdowns, or is the ceiling higher than that? So I've got him ranked aggressively at wide receiver 13, and I feel fine with that. Right up there with like Tyler Lockett and these type of players. And then the other guy is Marquise Brown. I hope I'm not stealing anybody else's pick there, but I can't leave a draft without Marquise Brown because balled out as a rookie, despite the fact that he wasn't healthy. Again, another elite route runner, really strong reception perception profile. And he just happens to be attached to the MVP of last year in an offense that's going to throw the ball more this year. I think he's just going to smash his ADP this year too.
Wow. Gelhar, who you got?
Love both of those picks. I've drafted a bunch of Hollywood Brown and tried to get Terry McLaurin, but he's a darling of the fantasy community this season. So he's a tough one to get in some drafts. Another guy I love taking kind of in that same range, though, is DJ Chark, because he's lost a little bit of his luster as opposed to the other guys because he's on the Jaguars. But he's that's a team that could be bad. The defense doesn't look great. They could be forced to pass a lot. Chark already went for over 1,000 yards last year, proved he has a rapport with Minshew. Minshew targeted him a bunch in the red zone as well. And Chark also kind of fits the profile of, now that Jay Gruden's there as the offensive coordinator, the same type of wide receiver one Gruden had in the past in AJ Green. Chark's a, you know, 6'4". He ran like a 4.3 40. I'm sure James already knows that and is fanning himself over there. So you put together, he's got size, he's got speed, he's got talent, he's got a rapport with his quarterback, and he could be on a high-volume, terrible offense. I think we could see Allen Robinson circa like 2015 or 2014, whenever his big breakout season was, numbers in Jacksonville for Chark.
All right. Ko, who's on your list?
I love Raheem Mostert, man, and I kind of sort of been touting him for a while now. But again, if you're going to be one of those guys that decides to go kind of zero RB off the top and you're looking for that one home run running back pick in the mid rounds, I think Raheem, the dream is it, man. For me, he's going somewhere in the middle of the fifth round and led the NFL in yards per carry last year. I had him graded out as a top 15 running back, despite the fact that he just didn't get any starts last year. This is a player that was just phenomenal in a Kyle Shanahan run scheme. Last five games of the regular season, we're talking about a guy that averaged 14 total touches, so not a ton, but still turned that into 90 total yards, had seven touchdowns in those five games. We know what he did in the playoffs, had one phenomenal game against Alex Gellhardt boys.
I still see him gashing at my back door every night when I close my eyes. I just see Raheem Mostert.
What a train wreck.
Running through gaps and then he
220 rushing yards in that playoff game, four total touchdowns. And he also got 31 touches in that game. And I think that's important. Again, with Matt Breida kind of traded away, I think Mostert can – I'm not worried about Tevin Coleman. Let me just put it to you that way. I know Jerick McKinnon's coming back. Not worried about that dude either. I think Raheem Mostert's the real deal. And for me, he's a player that's chasing that bag. He wants that money, man. He's chasing that bag. And every single time he takes a stretch run to the outside, he's just chasing bags. So give me that guy in the fifth round.
All right. Franchise, who you got?
Look, I'm not as deep into these ADPs as you guys might be because my fantasy advice has taken a backseat. So I'm coming to this with the perspective of the average guy looking at ADPs for like the first time in a couple months. And I'm looking at Devontae Parker down here at like 61 overall, according to Fantasy Pros.
There you go.
And why this dude was on fire late last year. Like, he exploded the second half of the year. He had crazy amount of targets, like double digit targets the entire second half of the year. You got Tua under center in Miami now. This dude is a wide receiver too, like at worst. Why would you not try to target him in the sixth round or wherever he's fallen? That's just crazy to me. Maybe you guys can talk me out of it. But I think Devontae Parker is a solid snag that late.
So I'm going to go with another wide receiver that's coming even later than Devontae Parker. And that's Michael Gallup, who I've been referring to as the Jan Brady of fantasy football this offseason because, like, literally everybody talks about Amari Cooper. Everybody talks about C.D. Lamb. And it's like Michael Gallup's like, hey, guys, I had 1,100 yards last year, right? And we talked earlier about Zeke and how we love Zeke because he's part of that high-powered offense. He's attached there with a good quarterback. Well, Michael Gallup is too, in an offense that I think is transitioning more to be Dak-centric in terms of throwing the football. Look, Amari Cooper, I love those big weeks. We all love those big, huge weeks. But, you know, you also have to prepare for, you know, the follow-up being, you know, one catch for 14 yards and just having to try to live with that. I would prefer that steady week-to-week production that you were getting from Michael Gallup last year. And I just think, you know, look, you go with the rookies having maybe a longer learning curve because they haven't been able to get on the field yet. Gallup doesn't have that. Plus, look, once upon a time, we used to always believe in the third year breakout of wide receivers. If that holds true, this is year three for Michael Gallup. So it just seems like he is ready to really explode this season. So I've been a big fan there.
MG, Matt, Michael Gallup, another MG. Yep.
He's got to stick together, you know.
And I know he only played 14 games last year, but in the 14 games he played, he actually had a higher percentage of the air yards at 28% and the target share at 21% than Amari Cooper did over the course of the season. I'm with you. He's the only Cowboys receiver I want to draft at cost this year.
Yeah, he's going like 50 picks after Cooper. And also, I think like people worrying about CeeDee Lamb, with Jason Witten and Randall Cobb gone, that's going to be a lot of CeeDee Lamb's production. He ran a lot in the slot in college, and that's probably where the Cowboys are going to force him into the offense. I mean, that's a great trio, but that's a lot. Like, I think 166 targets walked out the door between Randall Cobb and Jason Witten last year, which is insane.
Gross. Those two commanded 166 targets together.
And you think now if those targets are going to go to CeeDee Lamb and Blake Jarwin instead, whoo boy, that Cowboys offense is going to be fun.
All right. I will say this. I'm a little bit worried about consistency week to week for all three of those guys. We already know Amari Cooper is very inconsistent. I think CeeDee Lamb, we don't know what we're going to get there. But I mean, even Michael Gallup to a degree, you know, I do think there are going to be weeks where he posts really bad fantasy scores. But I think he might be even a player that we look at from a season long perspective and say, oh, he had a pretty good season. But if you're rolling with him on a week to week basis, it might be painful some weeks. So I'm a little bit worried there, but I agree with what you guys are saying overall. The guy's a phenomenal player and you know, running opposite of Amari Cooper, has benefited Dak Prescott a lot. And I tell you what, if we're talking about reaching for a quarterback, I think Dak Prescott might be a candidate too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, again, this guy's chasing that money. And he's got an awesome group of players. Finally, Jason Witten is gone. Blake Jarwin maybe steps forward, but overall they just get more athleticism at that position and the pass catching group. Oh my goodness. I mean, and you throw in Zeke. I mean, Dak Prescott might legitimately be the QB1 when all is said and done. That's how good his supporting cast is.
He was QB2 last year. I mean, it's not far off. Also, his rushing yards, like, and rushing touchdowns, he's usually a pretty good bet to take some into the end zone on his own.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, so now we got to do the flip side, right? The guys third round or later that you are avoiding at all costs. Harmon, go.
All the Rams, man. I mean, other than like the only guy that I've really taken is Tyler Higbee. I took him in the Scott Fishbowl. I think he's fine, even though I think there's some worry about him. You know, is Gerald Everett going to come in? But honestly, I have no idea what the hell this Rams offense is supposed to look like this year. I think that Robert Woods and especially Cooper Kupp are, you know, their roles are going to change a little bit this year. I think Robert Woods is a pretty like safe bet for volume. I think
Woods is the guy I love. I really love Robert Woods this year. I feel like he's maybe the safest thing there.
That's I agree with you that I think he's the safest bet in this offense, but I just think there's no ceiling with Robert Woods. I think that there's always somebody. It's not that I dislike Woods, it's that I really just always find myself liking someone else where he's going in drafts. But the backfield especially, like, I'm fine taking Daryl Henderson because he's like the, I guess, again, the hive mind has just assumed it's going to be the Cam Akers show. But, you know, these guys are drafted in pretty similar range. And honestly, again, I think that this is going to be a committee backfield. So it's just been mostly that's the team that I find myself having the most questions about and generally avoiding.
All right. Alex Gellar.
I'm avoiding all of the mid-range tight ends. After we get past Kelce, Kittle, and Andrews, get them out of my life at their ADP. I don't want Beckers. I don't want Darren Waller. I don't want Hunter Henry, Evan Ingram, Gronk, Higby, Jared Cook, all those guys. Not a chance at their ADPs. All of them have massive concerns for, like, workload or regression or new systems. And there's so many better players I'd rather take a chance on, like literally all of the wide receivers we mentioned in your last question, than any of those guys, especially when you've got good high upside late round targets that you can take a chance on or stream, like Blake Jarwin and Mike Gesicki and, you know, even Dallas Goedert on the same team with Ertz. You know, there's just so many different guys I'd rather take later than investing a like fourth to ninth round pick on a tight end who I'm going to hate starting every week.
The times I've taken Hunter Henry, like in mock drafts, I've just felt kind of queasy looking at the rest of my roster. It just, it has not worked out. So I feel you on that one. James Coe, who are you dodging like the Matrix right now?
I talked about this on the pod last a couple weeks ago, but I continue to hammer this point home, but I just don't like Aaron Rodgers this year. And it kills me to say that because he's one of my all-time favorite players. He's from Cal. I love Aaron Rodgers, but in fantasy, forget about it. I mean, and I know what people are thinking too, right? Like he falls to that mid to late eighth round. You're thinking, oh my God, I just got a steal. I got Aaron Rodgers, the great Aaron Rodgers in the eighth round. This is great. Listen, bro, at this point, Aaron Rodgers from a fantasy perspective is a streamable quarterback at best. That's it. I mean, this is a guy that was outside the top 12 in terms of per game scoring. Last year, I think he actually was outside the top 15 in 12 of the 16 games he played. So this was a player that hurt you almost each and every week because you felt like you had to roll out Aaron Rodgers. And when you invest in a quarterback, fantasy quarterback in that eighth round, again, you're feeling like I got to roll this guy out there. And it's just not the case. I look at the draft board. I see Josh Allen going around later. I see Carson Wentz, Matt Stafford, Cam Newton, Daniel Jones. I could get Baker Mayfield four rounds later than Aaron Rodgers. Sign me up at that price all day long. And to me, I just think Aaron Rodgers in the eighth round just does not make any sense whatsoever. And he's a player that I will have zero shares of in 2020.
I will say, I do feel like the muscle memory has sort of faded because for years there, you know, last couple of years, there was that muscle memory of like, hey, Aaron Rodgers, like we would talk about who could finish as the QB1 and, you know, we would throw out Mahomes or, you know, Breeze or whatever. But there was like always that muscle memory that was like, hey, you know, Aaron Rodgers could do it too. I feel like that's faded. Like we've all sort of realized that, you know, whether because it's just age or the situation or whatever, like it's just not the same as it was, say, 5 years ago. And I think fantasy drafters are going to start to kind of clue into that too. I think that's going to kind of start to take hold. All right, franchise, as who I know you are Madden centric, but who are guys that if you're fantasy drafting, you're sort of shying away from right now?
I'm definitely shying away from Stephon Diggs this year.
Oh, no.
It's a good call.
He goes to Buffalo. I think they ranked like 27th in pass offense last year. They averaged like 200 pass yards a game. Now, yes, will he be the wide receiver one in Buffalo? Sure. How many touchdowns, like, do you realistically see him scoring there with John Brown and Cole Beasley still in there? I think they each scored 6 touchdowns last year. I think John Brown had over 1,000 yards, but that was it. I just do not see him, like, having upside in Buffalo at all, and you're just going to be hitting yourself if you know, he might be, like, a flex play if you need help, but I'm not taking him. I think he's going, like, wide receiver 21, early 6th round, maybe. I'm avoiding at all costs there.
Yeah, that makes me feel sad because I've drafted Stephon Diggs in a few places. But I think everything you said is sort of spot on. I mean, I will say that when I've drafted him, it has come with a little bit of worry. Like, it's not a confident selection, but I feel you. I mean, I will say that I had, you know, you guys kind of touched on a lot of, like, Cam Akers, I just haven't been able to get on board with because Sean McVay is giving us zero clarity right now. Hunter Henry was another name that I sort of had on my list that I can't really get on board with, just because I said, like Gelhar said, those mid-round tight ends just really aren't doing anything for me. I mean, another name that people seem to sort of like as, I won't say a dart throw, but with upside that I don't see right now is just J.K. Dobbins. Just because, you know, look, I think Mark Ingram still has a pretty strong grasp on that job there in Baltimore. And there are so many other guys there, right? I mean, Justice Hill, Harmon, he might still be alive. Who knows?
Hard to say.
You know, but Gus Edwards is still hanging around there collecting a paycheck. I mean, there's so many other guys there. Plus, you got to keep in mind that Lamar is still going to run. He's still going to score those rushing touchdowns. I think for Dobbins, after this year, we get to 2021. You know, we can have this conversation again about J.K. Dobbins, but I just haven't been willing to take a shot at him in this backfield, not really feeling confident that there's a path to enough touches to make him actually relevant for me to hold a roster spot for. So that's all I have to say about that. All right, this is the part that I'm really here for, right? As we kind of get close to the end of this thing, hot takes, because I always felt like our hot take podcast was always one of the best, especially because, you know, we never threw it in each other's faces at the end of the year or anything like that at all. So I need a hot take from each of you guys for the 2020 fantasy season. James, you seem to be the hot takiest of us most consistently, so I'll let you start this.
That's a euphemism for saying you're the most wrong.
I was going to say bold, forward thinking.
But yes, I have been known to go out on limbs every now and again. But I'll just double down on this Raheem Mostert take, man. I really, really liked what I saw on tape last year. I love the Shanahan offense. And I think, again, motivated by money, which is always one of the great motivators in life. I think Raheem Mostert is going to chase that bag. And for me, I'll just say this right now. I think Raheem Mostert finished this the season as a top five fantasy running back. That's how much I believe.
That's a hot gig.
Let's go.
All right, Alex Gilhorn, what is your hot take?
I don't know if mine's quite as hot because it's not as specific, but the Dolphins offense in general will offer league-winning upside in some way, shape, or form this year, whether it be from the late-round picks of Matt Breda or Jordan Howard or Devontae Parker, you know, Preston Williams, who people forget about because he was on fire to start the season last year. Hell, even Mike Gesicki or Tua. But I think this Dolphins offense is coming at a massive discount, and it'll be hard to be worse than they were last year. I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick led this team in rushing last year, for God's sake. So if Jordan Howard can come in and get a bunch of goal line work, or Matt Breida looks like, you know, and he stays healthy and isn't questionable every other week, I think there is going to be some people that have Dolphins on their teams. You know, when you look at the end of the year and it's like player X was on, you know, Y percentage of championship rosters, there's going to be a Dolphin or two in that mix.
All right. All right, Harmon, what's your hot take?
Yeah, mine's similar to Alex, just, you know, not as specific as James, but it's about an entire offense. And I can't, every time I look at the Chargers offense, I think this entire outfit is underrated. And it wouldn't be a Stronghold reunion if we didn't talk a little Tyrod hype.
Yeah.
Because here's the deal, man. If he's the quarterback that he was in Buffalo from like an efficiency perspective, just, you know, not the guy that we saw early in Cleveland, I think this whole offense is in for a pretty good year. And like everyone expects him to just, you know, just slam the hell out of the run, you know, not throw the ball. I think they can easily throw the ball 530, 540 times. And I project Keenan Allen to have a 24% share of those targets. That's more than enough for him to beat his ADP. Mike Williams, I think, is really underrated. I mean, that guy is dirt cheap, and I think he's got bankable touchdown regression. He offers you those big weeks, and again, you're paying nothing for him. And Austin Eckler, a James Coe Danger Zone alum, this guy is a stud. Like, remember when we all used to say, oh, Christian McCaffrey, he can't be a full, you know, time running back, he can't run between the tackles. Well, talk about a wrong ass take. Now I think Austin Eckler can be that guy, and I think he can catch a bunch of passes if they are going to really truly lean on the run. great, then I think Austin Eckler is going to be the guy because I think he can do everything. So I think he's underrated where he's going in drafts. I think Keenan Allen is underrated where he's going in drafts. Tyrod Taylor, if he starts 12 games, he's going to be a great late-round quarterback. And Mike Williams, I think, is too cheap. I'm with you, though. The only guy that I really don't like is Hunter Henry because he's in that mix. So sorry to throw a little shade there. But I think this entire outfit is underrated, and especially Eckler. I think he could easily be a top five back this year.
Well, I mean, have you seen the pictures? He's BSOHL. So
I've worked out with the guy. Austin Eckler, bro.
Wow, man. Like, name drop. Just like you've worked out with Austin Eckler. You've worked out with Skip Bayless. I mean, anybody else you want to throw
I worked out adjacent to Skip Bayless, but that's a story for another pod. Eckler actually took me through a light version of his workout. There's a video on my Twitter page. If you just and it was tough. It was really hard.
I will say, though, about Tyrod, too, because like I have sort of been hesitant about the Charger offense this year, but you know, we keep seeing all these comps, right? These side-by-side comps, production-wise, of Josh Allen and Tyrod Taylor, and they are, you know, nearly identical in so many different aspects. And it does make me wonder why folks have pretty much just written off Tyrod while Josh Allen, you know, was getting praised as a potential sleeper quarterback this year. Like, it doesn't necessarily make a ton. Maybe because, you know, Tyrod's not a physically hulking guy with a gigantic arm. Like, I don't know. Yeah. But so much about their production mirrors each other that you would think that Tyrod would be getting more love, and it just hasn't happened. Don't know. Franchise, hit me with a hot take, please.
My hot take is a return to glory to one of the best running backs of the last, you know, three or four seasons here. Todd Gurley is going to be a top five fantasy running back this year in Atlanta. Ooh. Sometimes all you need is a little change of scenery, you know? So Todd Gurley's coming in here. I think he's going as RB17 off draft boards. The Falcons were fifth in overall offense last year. They had a terrible run offense, but the Rams offense was just in disarray last year. He just needed to get out of there and get a new change of scenery. And I think if he's the bell cow in Atlanta, we're going to see him bounce back in a big way this year. And I think he's huge value where he's being drafted. No respect for Todd Gurley.
I think change of scenery and an offense that will actually throw him the football on occasion, because the Rams didn't do that last year.
Yeah.
Which is kind of amazing. All right. My hot take for a while, my hot take most of this offseason has been that Jonnu Smith was going to win some people some fantasy championships. And I still do believe that. But I'm going to give you a special hot take just for this show. Ronald Jones is going to be an RB1 at the end of the season.
Oh, God.
He has been – look, I saw it recently as we were potting here. Pat Thorman, who does great work over at the Establish the Run, put out a tweet that says, the Bucks should rename their backfield the Rorschachs, because it really is true. Like, you want to start a fantasy argument, just bring up the Buccaneers backfield. But I've recently started to come around on Rojo, not just because he's a Trojan, but fight on. but, you know, I think with the offseason being what it is, him getting more of those opportunities, him, you know, getting in better shape. He is also hashtag BSOHL. And then yesterday, I think what sealed it for me was seeing a tweet that, you know, Tom Brady has been working with him on, you know, his pass catching skills and his route running and that sort of thing. So like, yeah, call me a sucker for like cryptic tweets right now. But like, I'm like, let's go, giddy up. Like, I'm about to buy in on Ronald Jones here. So my hot take is that by the end of the year, he will be an RB1. So if you're a 10 team league, he's a top 10 guy. 12 team league, he's a top 12 guy. Whatever you think. We're going to be talking about Ronald Jones in that light by the end of the year.
There is cryptic tweets and coach speak. That's all we got. It's limited. No preseason games. Like Tom Brady saying Ronald Jones, you know, Cavs are looking hot these days.
That's gospel.
All we got.
That's all we got. So, all right. I couldn't get us all back together to do a podcast one more time without, and doing this, James, hopefully with your blessing, a round of daily daps. Like we just have to.
Yeah.
It was a signature. It was a hallmark of what we did those years together. So James Cole, because this was your brainchild, that this was originally your baby, I would like you to please start this round of daily daps, if you would.
It would be my pleasure. I will give daily daps to a couple of actors there on Umbrella Academy, Aidan Gallagher, who plays Five, and then Robert Sheehan, who plays Klaus. I just feel like I love the show. It's a great show. But those two guys carry the show, and they sparkle and they shine, man. And daily daps to both Aidan Gallagher and Robert Sheehan.
Cool. Gilhar, your daily dap, please.
I've got two. The first one goes out to Palm Springs. It was a Hulu original with Andy Samberg and, I forget her name, but she was the mother from How I Met Your Mother. Stuck in a groundhog type day situation, but every day they're at a wedding. I think it's a charming little inversion on it. You get some great J.K. Simmons. Both the leads are terrific. And also, like, when we're living these quarantine lives where it's also kind of Groundhog Day-esque, you know, you empathize with it. When Andy Samberg's cracking his first beer at 10 a.m., like, hey, pal. that's the first one. I would say check it out. And then the second one is my new, like, favorite summer snack thing that I've done is putting grapes in the freezer. Have any of you guys ever done this?
Yeah.
Let me tell you, this is the best because they last forever. I can see you idiots are going
to
make
it. Franchise is ready to just
so ready.
Let it go. Let it go. Let it out, man.
Not only are they
alive forever,
but they're a good, healthy, like, snack or dessert. You get that with dinner, grab a handful of frozen grapes. It's perfect.
It's all about the texture, the frozen texture on the grape.
Recommend it to everybody. They're delicious.
Harmon, I know you're still working on yours, so I'll wait to go back to you. So, Franchise, what is your daily dap?
Yeah, I'm going to stick to my routine and go with a music recommendation. My Morning Jacket just put out an album. The Waterfall Part 2. It is indeed my most favorite album of the year so far. Throw that record on, clean your house, clean your apartment. It's got a little bit of like heavy rock, progressive rock, some folk, some Americana. Jim James is a genius. I love My Morning Jacket, so check out that album.
Yeah, I know, Franchise, you and I, like, you know, we will swap Spotify links on albums occasionally. I feel like, you know, there's been some good ones that came out this year. The new Tame Impala album came out. The new Crying Ben album just came out, which is fantastic. Chicano Batman, who I love, just put out a great album not that long ago. It's been a good, you know, if there has been a bright side, it has been that, you know, we've gotten some good music. I haven't heard the Taylor Swift album, but I hear that's pretty good too. So.
Meh. It's fine.
Swifties direct all hate mail toward at Matt Franchise.
No.
Harmon, what is your daily dap, please?
Well, I think mine is, you know, something about myself. No, I'm just kidding. But so my fiance and I now took a cross country road trip to go back and see some family and all that. And I got to say, the podcast, I'm a little late to this party, but the podcast that got us through this trip was My Dad Wrote a Porno. Sorry if this is a family friendly show, but we're going to talk about it.
It is.
I mean, you will die laughing. There were several times I thought I was going to, you know, run off the road because I was laughing so hard at this podcast. And it's not necessarily the quote intimacy that's always the most funny part or the fact that one of the hosts' dad wrote this erotic novel. It's just how terrible the writing how poorly written it is, how poorly conceived some of these things are, and just like the way it is literally perfect. If you're just sitting around your house right now with nothing to do, which everybody is,
which we all are,
instead of cleaning up to Jim James or whatever, who I love, throw that on the speakers and you will legitimately pee yourself. It is that fun.
That it is absolutely hilarious. I 100% agree. And actually, I have not watched it, but they did a kind of a live show that's on HBO. So
yeah, I haven't watched it either.
You can go find that somewhere. I got a couple. One for those of you in the Los Angeles area, this more applies. But the Common Space Brewery. I know that we live in an age of a lot of, you know, microbreweries and that sort of thing, but they do a lot of really good stuff. I've been kind of sampling some of their beers. Plus, they deliver, which is pretty phenomenal.
Like, crucial.
Right? It is crucial that they will deliver, especially if you're in the L.A. area, within 24 hours. That's been a pretty big plus. My daily dap, though, for those of you who aren't in L.A. and can't get this beer, the show 000 on Amazon Prime, which I know there have been a lot of shows about the drug trade and what have you. This one kind of takes a different look at it in terms of, like, kind of following a shipment and both from the seller to the distributor and just kind of a different look. It's very intense, but it's only 8 episodes, so it's fairly short. You can blow through it in an evening. I'm going to be selfish because I'm hosting the show too. One more quick one. Homecoming on Amazon Prime too. It's just kind of a weird, trippy sci-fi sort of thing. It's 2 seasons. I think each season's like 7 or 8 episodes. They're all half an hour. You could probably watch both seasons in an afternoon. It was based originally on a podcast. It has been turned to a TV show. It's pretty fantastic. So I recommend that. So, guys, this was fun. I really had fun doing it. I know for those of you out there listening, I will give you some background on this. This is a thing, this is an idea that between the five of us, we have been kicking around for a while, and the timing just never quite worked out. So then I realized I had a hole in the schedule.
You got a window.
I had a window. And so once I realized I had that window, I immediately fired off a save the date text to all these guys. And they immediately jumped in and said they were bound to do it. Look, I'll say this. I know for me, and I know I'm sure for you guys too, we've been overwhelmed by the amount of support and love that we get from you guys on Twitter. The number of people who hit us up and talk about how they missed this podcast and they enjoyed all of us together in what has been, you know, I think a frustrating time for a lot of us. You know, I won't speak for all of you, but I know for me it has been kind of heartwarming to see the outpouring of support. So, yeah, we felt it was kind of fun to get back and do this just for us, but for you guys too as well. I don't know. Anybody agree? Disagree? Anything to add on that?
Yeah, no, I disagree. No.
Go ahead, James.
I was going to say, it does say a lot, you know, that it's been 2 years since we've done a podcast together. And the comments on, you know, Twitter, Facebook and stuff and Instagram, they still do trickle in. And I think that says a lot to what we had going on. And we had one of the best shows out there. And I wish they gave us the opportunity to kind of let it marinate a little bit more, but it certainly warms the heart, I think, to still get those messages again years after the fact, which is cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everybody else has gone. Everybody's gone on to do awesome stuff. Like Marcus talked about it at the top. You know, we all talked about what's going on, and I think, you know, in a weird way, it was great that we split up so that we could all, you know, go and do our own separate things and you know, continue to rise up the ranks of whatever the hell we're trying to do. But the reality is, I think we'll never, I felt this way when it was going on. And I think the responses that we continue to get about is that we will never have something as cool as this again. You know, I work with some cool people, I do some fun shows, whatever. Nothing is ever quite like the Stronghold, and I think that is, you know, people continuing to talk about it is special to me, and I think it reflects the specialness that we had together.
Yeah, I was gonna say this is the only save the date I got this year that stuck. So I'll punch COVID-19 right in the face though if it tried to stop me from hanging out with you guys on a pod again. So, you know, appreciate all the people messaging us, but it's fun to just get back on this after like 2 years and feel like we haven't missed a beat, and we're sitting in that cold studio at the NFL Network.
Miss that studio, man. Miss any studio. Man.
Yeah, dude. It's been so much fun. Hey, and we'll, you know, I don't know. We'll see you guys in the happy hour Zooms if we ever get another one going again at some point.
If not, we'll be back in the Slack chat, except James, because he's too good for us. Right. We'll be back in the Slack chat in like 5 minutes, you know, doing what we do best.
Oh, absolutely. Well, hey, I appreciate you guys coming and sitting in with me. I've had a lot of fun. At some point, maybe we can find another window in the future to do this again, because it was enjoyable. And for those of you out there, that is it. We are done. I appreciate you hanging out with us as always. You know the drill. Tell two friends to tell two friends. Rate, review, and remember, the only reason some people get lost in thought is because it's unfamiliar territory. Thanks for listening to the NFL Fantasy Football Podcast presented by Caesars Rewards. Take care of yourself, wear a mask, and we'll see you on Thursday.